Chapter 31. It was late afternoon, the third day since the eclipse. Binet came limping down the quiet country road that led to the sanctuary, moving slowly and carefully, looking about him in all directions. There were three suns shining in the sky, and the stars had long since returned to their age-old obscurity. But the world had irrevocably changed in those 3 days, and so had Binet. This was the young astronomer's first full day of restored reasoning power. What he had been doing for the 2 previous days, he had no clear idea. The whole period was simply a blur, punctuated by the rising and setting of Onos, with other suns wandering across the sky now and then. If someone had told him that this was the 4th day since the catastrophe, or the 5th or 6th, Binet would not have been able to disagree. His back was sore, his left leg was a mass of bruises, and there were blood-encrusted scratches along the side of his face. He hurt everywhere, though the pain of the early hours had given way by now to dull aches of 6 different kinds radiating from various parts of his body. What had been happening? Where had he been? He remembered the battle in the observatory. He wished he could forget it. That howling, screaming horde of crazed townspeople breaking down the door. A handful of robed apostles were with them, but mainly they were just ordinary people. Probably good, simple, boring people, who had spent their whole lives doing the good, simple, boring things that kept civilization operating. Now, suddenly, civilization had stopped operating, and all those pleasant, ordinary people had been transformed in the twinkling of an eye into raging beasts. The moment when they came pouring in, how terrible that had been, smashing the cameras that had just recorded the priceless data of the eclipse, ripping the tube of the great solar scope out of the observatory roof, raising computer terminals high over their heads and dashing them to the floor. And Athor, rising like a demigod above them, ordering them to leave. One might just as well have ordered the tides of the ocean to turn back. Binet remembered imploring Athor to come away with him, to flee while there still might be a chance. "Let go of me, young man," Athor had roared, hardly seeming even to recognize him. "Get your hands off me, sir." And then Binet had realized what he should have seen before, that Athor had gone insane, and that the small part of Athor's mind that was still capable of functioning rationally was eager for death. What was left of Athor had lost all will to survive, to go forth into the dreadful new world of the post-eclipse barbarism. That was the most tragic single thing of all, Binet thought, the destruction of Athor's will to live. The great astronomer's hopeless surrender in the face of this holocaust of civilization. And then, the escape from the observatory. That was the last thing that Binet remembered with any degree of confidence. Looking back at the main observatory room as Athor disappeared beneath a swarm of rioters, then turning, darting through a side door, scrambling down the fire escape, out the back way into the parking lot, where the stars were waiting for him in all their terrible majesty. With what he realized later had been sublime innocence, or else self-confidence verging on arrogance, Binet had totally underestimated their power. In the observatory, at the moment of their emergence, he had been too preoccupied with his work to be vulnerable to their force. He had merely noted them as a remarkable occurrence, to be examined in detail when he had a free moment, and then had gone on with what he was doing. But out here, under the merciless vault of the open sky, the stars had struck him in their fullest might. He was stunned by the sight of them. The implacable cold light of those thousands of suns descended upon him and knocked him groveling to his knees. He crawled along the ground, choking with fear, sucking in sharp gasps of breath. His hands were shaking feverishly. His heart was palpitating. Streams of sweat were running down his burning face. When some shred of the scientist he once had been motivated him to turn his face toward that colossal brilliance overhead, so that he could examine and analyze and record, he was compelled to hide his eyes after only a second or two. He could remember that much, the struggle to look at the stars, his failure, his defeat. After that, everything was murky. A day or two, he guessed, of wandering in the forest. Voices in the distance, cackling laughter, harsh, discordant singing. Fires crackling on the horizon, the bitter smell of smoke everywhere. Kneeling to plunge his face in a brook, cool, swift water sweeping along his cheek. A pack of small animals surrounding him. Not wild ones, Binet decided afterward, but household pets that had escaped, and baying at him as though they meant to rip him apart. Pulling berries off a vine. climbing a tree to strip it of tender golden fruit, and falling off, landing with a disastrous thud. The long hours of pain before he could pick himself up and move onward. A sudden furious fight in the deepest, darkest part of the woods. Fists flailing, elbows jabbing into ribs, wild kicks. Then stone throwing, bestial screeching. A man's face pushed close up against his own, eyes red as flame. Fierce wrestling, the two of them rolling over and over, reaching for a massive rock, bringing it down in a single decisive motion. Hours, days, a feverish daze. Then, on the morning of the third day, remembering finally who he was, what had happened, thinking of Raista, his contract mate, remembering that he had promised to go to her at the sanctuary when his work at the observatory was done. The sanctuary. Now, where was that? Binet's mind had healed enough for him to recall that the place of refuge that the university people had established for themselves was midway between the campus and Cerro City, in an open rural area of rolling plains and grassy meadows. The physics department's old particle accelerator was there, a vast underground chamber, abandoned a few years back when they had built the new research center at Cerro Heights. It hadn't been difficult to equip the echoing concrete rooms for short-term occupation by several hundred people, and, since the accelerator site had always been sealed off from easy access for security reasons, it was no problem to make the site safe against any sort of invasion by townsfolk who might be driven insane during the eclipse. But in order to find the sanctuary, Binet first had to find out where he was. And he had been wandering randomly in a dismal stupor for at least 2 days, perhaps more. He could be anywhere. In the early morning hours, he found his way out of the forest, almost by accident, stepping forth unexpectedly into what had once been a neatly laid out residential district. It was deserted now, and in frightening disarray, with cars piled up every which way in the streets where their owners had left them when they no longer were capable of driving, and the occasional body lying in the street under a black cluster of flies. There was no sign that anyone was alive here. He spent a long morning trudging along a suburban highway, lined by blackened, abandoned homes, without recognizing a single familiar landmark. At midday, as Trey and Petru rose into the sky, he entered a house through its open door and helped himself to whatever food he could find that had not spoiled. No water came out of the kitchen tap, but he found a cache of bottled water in the basement and drank as much of that as he could hold. He bathed himself and the rest. Afterward, he proceeded up a winding road to a hilltop cul-de-sac of spacious, imposing dwellings, every one of them burned to a shell. Nothing at all was left of the uppermost house except a hillside patio decorated with pink and blue tiles. No doubt very handsome once, but marred now by thick black lumps of clotted debris scattered along its gleaming surface. With difficulty, he made his way out onto it and looked out into the valley beyond. The air was very still. No planes were aloft. There was no sound of ground traffic. A weird silence resounded from every direction. Suddenly, Binet knew where he was, and everything fell into place. The university was visible off to his left. A handsome cluster of brick buildings, many of them now streaked with black smoke stains, and some seeming to be altogether destroyed. Beyond, on its high promontory, was the observatory. Binet glanced at it quickly and looked away, glad that at this distance he was unable to make out its condition very clearly. Far away to his right was Cerro City, gleaming in the bright sunlight. To his eyes it seemed almost untouched. But he knew that if he had a pair of field glasses, he would surely see shattered windows, fallen buildings, still glowing embers, rising wisps of smoke, all the scars of the conflagration that had broken out at nightfall. Straight below him, between the city and the campus, was the forest in which he had been wandering during the time of his delirium. The sanctuary would be just on the far side of that. He might well have passed within a few hundred yards of its entrance a day or so ago, all unknowing. The thought of crossing that forest again did not appeal to him. Surely it was still full of madmen, cutthroats, irate escaped pets, all manner of troublesome things. But from his vantage point on the hilltop, he could see the road that cut across the forest, and the pattern of streets that led to the road. Stick to paved routes, he told himself, and you'll be all right. And so he was. Onos was still in the sky when he completed the traversal of the forest highway, and turned onto the small rural road that he knew led to the sanctuary. Afternoon shadows had barely begun to lengthen when he came to the outer gate. Once past that, Binet knew. He had to go down a long, unpaved road that would take him to the second gate, and thence around a couple of outbuildings to the sunken entrance to the sanctuary itself. The outer gate, a high metal mesh screen, was standing open when he reached it. That was an unexpected and ominous sight. Had the mob come roaring in here, too? But there was no sign of mob destruction. Everything was as it should be, except that the gate was open. He went on in, puzzled, and made his way down the unpaved road. The inner gate, at least, was closed. "I am Binet 25, he said to it, and gave his university identification code number. Moments passed, and lengthened into minutes, and nothing happened. The green scanner eye overhead seemed to be working. He saw its lens sliding from side to side. But perhaps the computers that operated it had lost their power, or had been smashed altogether. He waited. He waited some more. "I am Binet 25, he said again, finally, and gave his number a second time. "I am authorized to enter here." Then he remembered that mere name and number were not enough. There was a password to say also. But what was it? Panic churned his soul. He couldn't remember. He couldn't remember. How absurd, finally, to have found his way here and then be stranded at the outer gate by his own stupidity. The password. The password. Something to do with the catastrophe. That was it. Eclipse? No, not that. He racked his aching brain. Calgash 2? Didn't seem right. Dovum? Onos? Stars? That was closer. Then it came to him. Nightfall, he said triumphantly. Still, nothing happened. At least, not for a long while. But then, what seemed like a thousand years later, the gate opened to admit him. He zigzagged past the outbuildings and confronted the oval metal door of the sanctuary itself, set at a 45-degree angle into the ground. Another green eye studied him here. Did he have to identify himself all over? Evidently he did. "I am Binet 25, he said, preparing for another long wait. But the gate began immediately to roll back. He stared down into the sanctuary's concrete-floored vestibule. Raista 717 was waiting for him there, scarcely 10 yards away. "Binet," she cried, and came rushing toward him. "Oh, Binet! Binet!" Since they had first become contract mates 2 years earlier, they had never been apart longer than 18 hours. Now they had been separated for days. He pulled her slim form up against him and held her tight, and it was a long while before he would release her. Then he realized they were still standing in the open gateway of the sanctuary. "Shouldn't we go in and lock the gate behind us?" he asked. "What if I've been followed?" "I don't think I was, but..."
"It doesn't matter. There's no one else here."
"What?"
"They all went yesterday," she said, "as soon as Onos came up. They wanted me to come, too, but I said I was going to wait for you, and I did."
He gaped at her, uncomprehendingly. He saw now how weary and haggard she looked, how drawn and thin. Her once lustrous hair was hanging in unkempt strings, and her face was pale, unadorned. Her eyes were reddened and puffy. She seemed to have aged 5 or 10 years. "Raista, how long has it been since the eclipse?"
"This is the third day."
"3 days. That was more or less what I figured." His voice echoed strangely. He glanced past her, into the deserted sanctuary. The bare underground chamber stretched on and on, lit by a track of overhead bulbs. He saw no one as far as his eye could reach. He hadn't expected this, not at all. The plan had been for everyone to stay hidden down here until it was safe to emerge. In wonder, he said, "Where have they gone?"
"Amgondo," Raista said.
"Amgondo National Park? But that's hundreds of miles from here. Were they crazy, coming out of hiding on only the second day and going marching off to some place halfway across the country? Do you have any idea what's going on out there, Raista?" Amgondo Park was a nature preserve, far to the south, a place where wild animals roamed, where the native plants of the province were jealously protected. Binet had been there once, when a boy, with his father. It was almost pure wilderness, with a few hiking trails cut into it. She said,
"They thought it would be safer to go there."
"Safer?"
"Word came that everyone who was still sane, everybody who wanted to take part in the rebuilding of society should rendezvous at Mgondo. Apparently, people are converging on it from all over, thousands of them, from other universities mostly, and some government people.
Fine. A whole horde of professors and politicians trampling around in the park. With everything else ruined, why not ruin the last bit of unspoiled territory we have, too?
That isn't important, Bine. The important thing is that Mgondo Park is in the hands of sane people. It's an enclave of civilization in the general madness. And they knew about us. They were asking us to come join them. We took a vote, and it was 2-1 to go.
2-1, said Bine darkly. Even though you people didn't see the stars, you managed to go nuts anyway. Imagine leaving the sanctuary to take a 300-mile stroll. Or is it 500? Through the utter chaos that's going on. Why not wait a month, or 6 months, or whatever? You had enough food and water to hold out here for a year.
We said the same thing, Raista replied. But what they told us, the Mgondo people, was that the time to come was now. If we waited another few weeks, the roving bands of crazed men out there would coalesce into organized armies under local warlords, and we'd have to deal with them when we came out. And if we waited any longer than a few weeks, the Apostles of Flame would probably have established a repressive new government with its own police force and army, and we'd be intercepted the moment we stepped outside the sanctuary. It's now or never, the Mgondo people said. Better to have to contend with scattered, half-insane freelance bandits than with organized armies. So we decided to go.
Everyone but you.
I wanted to wait for you.
He took her hand.
How did you know I'd come? You said you would, as soon as you were finished photographing the eclipse. You always keep your promises, Bine.
Yes, Bine said, in a remote tone of voice. He had not yet recovered from the shock of finding the sanctuary empty. It had been his hope to rest here, to heal his bruised body, to complete the job of restoring his stars-shattered mind. What were they supposed to do now? Set up housekeeping here by themselves? Just the two of them in this echoing concrete vault? Or try to get to Mgondo all alone? The decision to vacate the sanctuary made a sort of crazy sense, Bine supposed. Assuming it made any sense at all for everyone to collect at Mgondo, it was probably better to make the journey now, while the countryside was in such a high degree of disorder, than to wait until new political entities, whether apostles or private regional buccaneers, clamped down on all travel between districts. But he had wanted to find his friends here, to sink down into a community of familiar people until he had recovered from the shock of the past few days. Dully, he said, "Do you have any real idea of what's going on out there, Raista?"
"We got reports by communicator, until the communicator channels broke down. Apparently the city was almost completely destroyed by fire, and the university was badly damaged also. That's all true, isn't it?"
Bine nodded. "So far as I know, it is. I escaped from the observatory just as a mob came smashing in. Aethor was killed, I'm pretty sure. All the equipment was wrecked. All our observations of the eclipse were ruined."
"Oh, Bine, I'm so sorry."
"I managed to get out the back way. The moment I was outside, the stars hit me like a ton of bricks. 2 tons. You can't imagine what it was like, Raista. I'm glad you can't imagine it. I was out of my mind for a couple of days, roaming around in the woods. There's no law left. It's everybody for himself. I may have killed someone in a fight. People's household animals are running wild. The stars must have made them crazy, too. And they're terrifying."
"Bine, Bine."
"All the houses are burned. This morning I came through that fancy neighborhood on the hill just south of the forest. Onos Point, is that what it's called? And it was unbelievable, the destruction. Not a living soul to be seen. Wrecked cars, bodies in the streets, the houses in ruins.
My God, Raista, what a night of madness.
And the madness is still going on."
"You sound all right," she said. "Shaken, but not..."
"Crazy.
But I was.
From the moment I first came out under the stars until I woke up today. Then things finally began to knit back together in my head. But I think it's much worse for most other people. The ones who hadn't the slightest degree of emotional preparation. The ones who simply looked up and, bam, the suns were gone, the stars were shining. As your Uncle Sheeran said, there will be a whole range of responses, from short-term disorientation to total and permanent insanity." Quietly, Raista said.
Sheeran was with you at the observatory during the eclipse, wasn't he?
Yes.
And afterward?
I don't know. I was busy overseeing the photographing of the eclipse. I don't have any idea what became of him. He didn't seem to be in sight when the mob broke in. With a faint smile, Raista said,
Perhaps he slipped away in the confusion. Uncle is like that, very quick on his feet sometimes when there's trouble. I'd hate to have had anything bad happen to him.
Raista, something bad has happened to the whole world. Athor may have had the right idea. Better just to let it sweep over you and carry you away. That way you don't have to contend with worldwide insanity and chaos.
You mustn't say that, Bine.
No. No, I mustn't. He came up behind her and lightly stroked her shoulders, bent forward, softly nuzzled behind her ear.
Raista, what are we going to do?
I think I can guess, she said.
Despite everything, he laughed.
I mean afterward.
Let's worry about that afterward, she told him.